Equity Residential, based in Chicago, reported its quarterly results over the last month. Per-share results reported were decent, but it shows that renter demand in urban and high-density, close-in suburban market is extraordinarily strong, demonstrated by the company saying 96% occupancy across the portfolio. But there is a supply shortage. David J. Nethercutt is with the CEO, and he is the CEO and president, I should say, of Equity Residential. He's with us in the CEO spotlight today to talk about rental properties and his business. First of all, good morning, David. Welcome to the opening bell. Let me ask you this. What trends are you seeing in the area after we see your quarterly report there? Looks like there's plenty of demand, but not enough supply. Is this happening in Chicago and everywhere you have properties?
Well, again, our properties are primarily all in the large coastal cities, Boston, New York, Washington, Southern California, San Francisco, and Seattle. And we are not seeing an increase in our residents move out to buy single-family homes. We have heard, I guess, in the reports that you mentioned, that they're seeing increases of that. Certainly as millennials age, as millennials have, you know, marry and have children, which they, of course, they're doing later in life, many of whom might want to live in a different lifestyle, more of a single-family home lifestyle. Until that point in time, though, they are extremely interested in living in these high-density urban environments. You're seeing that in Chicago today with a lot of new apartments being built in downtown Chicago because people want to live downtown in high walkable locations. So that while you are certainly seeing in some markets people moving out to buy single-family homes, we're not experiencing that in the high-density urban environments in which we operate.
You refer to this as re-urbanization. Give us a sense of what that means.
Well, that means just people moving back downtown and wanting to live downtown and live in a high-density, walkable environment. Several decades ago, maybe a different generation ago, people would immediately move to the suburbs. They were maybe fearful of living downtown. Now you see across the country a desire to live in these very dynamic, very exciting 24/7 cities in locations with high walkability to close proximity to public transportation, nightlife, dining, culture, education, healthcare. I mean, you name it. And you're seeing that in cities across the country, not just the large gateway cities, but even smaller cities. You're seeing more things happening downtown, and more people brings more restaurants and brings more activity, which in turn attracts more people. And it's just really exciting dynamic that we're seeing across the country.
And we hate to pit ourselves against suburban areas, but it really has become an us versus them kind of thing, isn't it? If this reurbanization is happening, we're seeing all of these areas being rejuvenated, and are they losing out then? Is that how we see that?
Well, that's a broad statement. Certainly you are seeing some communities have a problem with that, because what's happening in some places, you're seeing people being displaced from downtown because of how high rents have gone. Those people have been forced to move into maybe close-in suburban areas. And that puts a real toll on the service needs of those communities at a time when they may be having housing problems or they've seen the price of their housings actually reduce and see their tax base reduce. So that is becoming a problem in some areas. You're also seeing issues in more further out communities where, and you certainly see it in Chicago, where single-family home prices have not yet recovered to past peaks, where you see just anecdotal sort of stories about large 7,000-8,000 square foot homes way out in places like Barrington and Palatine that kind of sit empty and can't move because there's just no demand for living that kind of lifestyle today. So you're seeing a lot of changes happening in housing patterns where you'll see strength, I think, in sort of suburban areas are in some of the close-in, highly walkable suburban areas, like in Evanston, like in Oak Park, that have a dynamic downtown themselves, but single-family living within close proximity to downtown. I think those are the places where you'll see millennials leaving downtown looking for a single-family home lifestyle, but in a high walkable environment still with close proximity to downtown. But you want to go far out, I think you're going to have challenges.
How damaging is it to see big corporations like McDonald's and Motorola start to move their headquarters again back to the downtown areas to recoup some of these younger workers, as we've seen McDonald be very honest about saying they want to come here so they can get the workers who are the younger people who are living downtown? Are you seeing that in other markets as well?
Well, you've seen GE move to Boston, mm-hmm. for instance. I mean, this is about companies wanting to be near talent. If you think about it, 30, 40 years ago, when Sears moved to the suburbs, when Motorola moved to the suburbs, when you had the young engineer graduating from Purdue and marrying his college sweetheart and immediately moving to some small house in the suburbs and working for that company for 30 or 40, 50 years. Today, you're seeing that young engineer wanting to live downtown in these high density walkable cities. And so the companies are having to relocate to gain access to that talent. Young MBAs do not want to drive out to Kraft out in Glenview, or they don't want to go to the healthcare companies, Abbott, whatever, out mm-hmm. in North Chicago. And so those companies are having to adapt. Now, some of them are adapting by actually moving downtown. Others are adapting by opening offices downtown so that people can work downtown a few days and then have to go maybe out to the suburbs a few days. But this is a way that companies are having to respond to the competitiveness of trying to attract talent. And they're realizing they need to be down where these people want to live, work, and play.
And the talent we're talking about really are this group of millennials. How is that impacting the overall, not only just the way we look at housing, rental housing especially, but trends and the future? Are they going to be the impactor that everybody says they're going to be?
Well, they're having an impact on everything across the economy today. You've got two very large segments of the population. You've got an 80 million strong baby boom generation and about a similar size, actually maybe even slightly larger millennial size population of these kids that are 20 to 35 or so. And they are having a profound impact on a lot of things. I mean, they talk about that being a sharing society. This is the society that we believe is opting for rental living longer. They're certainly marrying later, having their children later in life. And they really do, I believe, desire and embrace the optionality and flexibility that's provided by rental housing. At the same time, they're using Uber and Zipcars. They're using, Rent the Runway for clothing. I mean, this is a sharing society. I think it's having a profound impact on lots of aspects of business, and companies are having to respond.
Does it also present new options for rental companies and leasing companies to come up with different styles of housing? Are we seeing it in the styles?
Well, what you're really seeing is smaller units to address the fact that these, obviously in our portfolio across the country, 40-some-odd percent of our units are occupied by a single individual. So you are seeing companies like Equity Residential that does development. We're building smaller units. I will tell you, we own some properties, in fact, that have got units that are 225 square feet. And I've done tours of these units, and people have asked me, David, how does anyone live in this unit? And I said, you're missing the point. They don't live in the unit. They live in the city. Mm-hmm. They sleep in the unit. They store their stuff in there, but they live in the city. They live in the coffee shops and the bars and the restaurants and the health clubs, what have you. So that's probably the single most important trend that we're seeing as people want to live downtown. They're willing. They have less stuff. They would rather spend their money on experiences, and so they will opt for smaller living spaces and live in them longer.
Let's take this idea a little bit further and apply it to just the future. Technology, artificial intelligence, virtual reality. Are all of these things impacting the way we live and the way we're going to live? Are they already playing into plans for future housing?
I don't think they have a great deal of effect on housing. I think that, we own property today that properties that are 50, 60, 90 years old that still operate just fine in the markets in which they're located because the assets themselves are well located. There's not much that you can do to change a 300 square foot box or a 500 square foot box or a 700 square foot box. I mean, you need a bathroom, you need a kitchen. I mean, it really not a whole lot you can do. The single most important thing that we believe we deliver for our residents is what's outside the front door. Is again the access and proximity to all these things that I've noted. Probably the single most important thing that we deliver on site is you need bandwidth. You need sufficient bandwidth for people to. Stream to work from home. So in our common areas, in our lobbies, in our rooftops, and in other areas, we need to make sure we have a lot of bandwidth. Beyond that, I'll tell you, there's just not a lot that's changed over the years with respect to the basic box.
And you bring up bandwidth; it's a good point because if you said 20 to 40% is the younger set, the millennial set, or less than that.
In terms of, it's an 80 million strong population cohort between the 20 to 35 or so year olds.
So on the older end of that, you're going to need bandwidth for healthcare, you know, home healthcare. That's a new thing where, you know, you have these new robots that are being used to take care of people in their older age. Lots of stuff, as you mentioned, with the younger people as well. Is there that access? Is the access to the high bandwidth there, or is that something communities need to
work
on?
I mean, that's something we are constantly working on and constantly making sure that we have access to. And again, I will tell you, as soon as you think you have enough bandwidth, I'm telling you, you probably don't, because the demand, the needs continually sort of escalate, and you need to keep meeting those needs. With respect to older folks, we are certainly seeing more and more of the aging baby boomer interested and desirous of living in the same high-density sort of areas for all the same reasons. They don't have as much of a bandwidth need as younger people do. And frankly, the only thing that they're looking for, in addition to all the other things I've mentioned in terms of public transportation and dining and nightlife culture, whatever, is access to great health care. And certainly Chicago is a classic example of there being, I mean, just phenomenal health care with Northwestern University and Rush and, you know, what have you. So I would say 20% of our units today are occupied by people that are 50 and over. We see no reason why that share of our usage of our units won't continue to increase as more and more people that are older look to get away from the labors of a single family home and look to live in the easier living of living in an apartment with walkability to all the sort of, you know, fun things great cities have to offer.
And so when you do see design issues come up with that older set, is it mainly fewer steps, fewer things to hurt themselves on?
Well, no, our properties are not focused on people who have those sort of special needs. There are lots of properties and lots of companies that do run businesses that tailor to those with higher needs. But, you know, people that are 50, 60, 70s are not, don't have those sorts of extra needs. And if they do, they would likely leave our properties and go elsewhere.
So what does it take to get into the field that you're in? What kind of background did you bring to the table? And if somebody's out there listening and thinking, yeah, this is what I want to do, what would you tell them?
Well, I think just the love for real estate, an interest in sort of rolling up your shirt sleeves and getting your fingers dirty and getting in there and learning about real estate. There's lots of different types of real estate, right? You know, office, retail, industrial, lodging, et cetera. So I think if one has an interest in learning about real estate, then I encourage them to just begin to make some investments themselves in rental units, single family housing and rental, and just begin to learn the trade.
Somebody's coming up through school, maybe getting ready to finish business education. Are there specialized courses that you would suggest?
I think the best thing that younger people can do to learn the space is to go in the commercial banking route. There are banks that have commercial real estate departments that lend money locally to single-family home builders and condominium converters and industrial developers, and it's a great way for young people to learn lots of different real estate businesses by being involved in a local commercial bank that's lending to people throughout the community.
So it sounds upbeat, what you've been describing. Is the trends, the past, the future, things seem to be upbeat. Are there any roadblocks out there that might be coming that have you concerned?
Well, the roadblocks we're experiencing right now is new supply. Now, if you look around Chicago, you see an awful lot of new apartments being built. Now, we don't have investments here in Chicago, and one reason we don't is because the ability to add new supply. But I think you've got a situation coming where the market's going to be very favorable to the renter going forward as all this new supply opens and needs to be leased up.
Is there a risk of having too much supply?
Depends on whose side of the equation you're on. Too much supply is not a good thing for the owner. Too much supply is a great thing for the renter.
David J. Nethercott is the chief executive officer of Equity Residential based in Chicago. He's had that post since January of 2006. Equity Residential builds, rehabs, and manages apartment communities across the country in markets like New York, Boston, Washington, D.C., Seattle, San Francisco, and Los Angeles.